Do you want to learn interesting psychological information in an easy, straightforward, and entertaining manner? Then you need to listen to The Shrink Is In, a podcast show produced and hosted by Dr. Howard Gurr. Dr. Gurr is a practicing licensed psychologist for more than 25 years in New York State, and now he is available to you on the internet. Now, here's Dr. Howard Gurr.
Hey, it's Dr. Gurr with another psychological podcast, and today I'm going to be talking to Lisa Brooks Kift, who is a marriage and family therapist who practices in San Diego. And we're going to be talking about family of origin issues and how our past may still affect our present. Let me give you a little background about Lisa before we meet her. Lisa has written numerous articles about topics related to mental health and relationships, which can be seen at her website, which is www.lisakifttherapy.com. She's also the author of Therapy at Home Workbooks. Premarital Counseling, the first in her Therapy at Home Workbook series, is available in e-book format. She is committed and passionate about helping people resolve their individual issues and have more satisfying relationships, either in her private practice or by her writing. Now, let's meet Lisa. Lisa, welcome to The Shrink Is In.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
And today's conversation is on, the topic really is our past. How does it affect our present? And I have to tell you that part of my training in a very cognitive, behavioral kind of way is based upon the fact that although something might have affected your past very strongly, it doesn't necessarily have to affect your present. And I spend a lot of time trying to get people to recognize that, yes, something happened or something was terrible in your past, but if you sit there and obsess about it and think about it all the time, it's kind of a waste of time and somewhat irrational. But your perspective is that our past really is very important.
Well, and I absolutely agree with you that in a lot of cases, you know, our past doesn't need to impact our present. And I'm certainly not suggesting that people should spend, you know, more time than they need to obsessing over it or staying in that place. Mm-hmm. When I talk about it, I really come from a place of trying to figure out, you know, what belief systems they may have developed in their families of origin, you know, as a result of messages they receive from important primary caregivers, et cetera, and how they might have viewed the world in a way such that they carried some of these belief systems onward into adulthood and maybe stuck in a certain place, kind of stuck to the past a little bit. And then the idea is to actually change those belief systems, challenge them, go back to maybe some of the situations that occurred, kind of go through some of the grief process and really make significant changes in the way that they whatever belief that they've formed that is usually incorrect, basically.
So if someone has a problem in the past that either they are not addressing or not even maybe even recognizing as being significant, it becomes kind of grist for the therapy mill?
Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing is, I have to say, most people don't present to therapy, you know, sitting in front of me and saying, look, my past is impacting my present, and I need us to work on that. They typically come in with symptoms, you know, of depression or symptoms of anxiety or struggling with anger management or, you know, having some other kind of distressing experiences that they want to try to fix or make go away. And what I will always do is sort of kind of carefully start picking up rocks and looking under them as far as what their family of origin experiences were. You know, did they develop any problematic belief systems? And when I talk about belief systems, I'm talking about, you know, how they have learned to view the world, how they learned to view themselves in the world, whether they can trust others, and that sort of thing that really starts to be developed from a very young age. And then tends to be reinforced by various situations and can end up where there are adults still kind of carrying some problematic belief systems and having, you know, depression, anxiety. I mean, there's so many different trajectories that these sorts of issues can take and paths. And then again, some people can have problematic situations or parents that weren't present or emotionally available or trauma, and they don't necessarily end up as adults with problems. I mean, it's really... Then you get temperament that plays in, you get You know, genetics that plays in. You get levels of resilience that play in. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of factors that kind of go into this mix. But not everyone is going to end up with a problem. But I'm telling you, most people I see that come through the door, typically I find a seed that's been planted. And I guess it's my work is I get to the seed. If they're willing to go there, because some people, I'll tell you, will say, I don't buy it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't want to talk about the past. It doesn't matter. And if they maintain that position, you know, absolutely I try to work from the present on, but I do believe that, you know, the deeper intense change occurs when you go back, try to figure out if they developed any unhealthy belief systems. You know, I'm unlovable, people can't be trusted, no one's going to be there for me, you know, on and on.
So those core irrational beliefs?
Core irrational beliefs, exactly.
Uh-huh. So, Lisa, what might a client of yours expect from the therapeutic work that you would do with them?
Mm-hmm. Well, like I mentioned, most times people present to therapy with depression, anxiety, anger, or some sort of distressing symptoms they're having, not necessarily family of origin issues. They don't say, I'm here to work on family of origin. So what I do is I first of all try to identify for them what triggers set them off to feeling poorly. And from there, I usually work my way to try to understand what their core belief systems are, because it's usually connected. For example, I'm unlovable. Oftentimes is one associated with depression, I find. And it's that I get an opportunity then at that point to kind of go back and take a look at what went on for them in their childhood, whether they got their needs met, what needs weren't met, kind of go through maybe experiencing some of the grief around that through letter writing to the person, the father, the mother, whoever, from the child's perspective. There's a lot of techniques I use for that. Meanwhile, using a lot of cognitive behavioral tools, challenging their thinking, helping them to stop. If they have a trigger situation they know is a sensitive one, they could stop the irrational thinking before it starts to go. And basically kind of go back and forth from past to present, you know, working on the past issues, but also helping them with tools to actually implement, to use every day to work with their depression or the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much of a back and forth kind of, you know, past and present kind of dance that I do with them.
Mm. Yeah, it's very similar to what we do up here, and a lot of cognitive behavioral techniques and confronting irrational belief systems and kind of training them to, you know, look at their origin of irrational beliefs and building new ones that are more rational.
Yeah. I think where I kind of spin off in my own sort of direction from that is where I spend a lot of time really with them sort of going through a grief process where they really can kind of go back in that time, and that really assists in helping them challenge and refute those beliefs from that child's perspective. And I kind of oftentimes will identify a child and an adult in them to be able to know, look, when you're feeling reactive, whatever it is, this is the child who didn't get his needs met, sort of acting out, or the kid's driving the bus and you're in the back seat type of analogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that it's the combination of sort of the family of origin stuff. I've learned a lot from John Bradshaw, as a matter of fact, as far as the family of origin piece. But combining that with the CBT, I find is a really, really effective mix for me. And I've been pretty successful with helping people work through a lot of different old emotional injuries.
I did a show actually last week on the long-term residual effects of 9/11. I'm in New York, and I did get a lot of 9/11, you know, PTSD cases.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably, I would find that every single one of them who had post-traumatic stress disorder in result to being either, you know, in the 9/11, you know, in the World Trade Center, or a family member of the someone who was lost in the World Trade Center, that every single one of them had an early traumatic event somewhere else in their lives that they never addressed. That the traumatic event of 9/11 wasn't their first trauma, but, you know, they really never addressed the first one, and that 9/11 just kind of, you know, made them lose it because they could no longer cope. But when you start digging, you found out that there was some major horrible situation that happened to them earlier on in their lives. Mm-hmm. And they never make the connection that, you know, you can only take so much in your life. And right. that second trauma is enough to push you over the edge.
That's so interesting because I think you're right. You know, people can go on and kind of not really have any experience, you know, that really is intense enough to kind of bring that to the forefront. Or maybe they've kind of done okay and they haven't had any distressing, you know, no depressions come into their life or anxiety or whatnot. They're just kind of going along and something big like that happens and they're not able to cope because, you know, as it turns out, they've actually had more in their life than they realized already.
Exactly.
So
right.
They may be more apt to sort of not know how to deal and kind of decompensate a little more and really have a hard time.
Or whatever coping mechanisms they developed, you know, worked. But with the introduction of this major trauma again, that, you know, their system just falls apart mm-hmm. and they can't handle what even, you know, normal issues anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking as you were talking, that, you know, things might have happened to somebody when they were a lot younger and they might look like everything is fine, but it's just a very maybe rigid defense mechanism that they developed. And with some subsequent stressor or trauma, that system fails.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, no, absolutely. When you talked about rigid, you know, rigid defense systems, I was thinking about. I've had a number of male military clients who talk about rigid defense systems because not only do they have their own rigid defense system set up, but they're in a job that is absolutely not okay for them to be vulnerable at all, to admit
right.
to that. So it's been interesting, but, you know, I've had some really wonderful experiences where really seeing, you know, over a period of time, you know, go from this kind of real tough, you know, everything's fine, yet they're obviously sitting in front of me, but
right.
to really going back and weeping over the little boy that they were that actually didn't have their mother in the way that they needed and then had other situations around that, but they'd sort of defended so strongly around it, yet the experience is still in them. So it's fascinating work. And I guess for me, you know, I love this job of being a psychotherapist, and I've done my own therapy, and I pull from my own life experiences, which is why it resonates so deeply for me. And I know my own work in the past really went down that vein. And I had some major shifts in my own life, and that's probably one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about this particular area. And I see, mm-hmm. you know, I tend to target the sort of my market is around sort of family of origin work, and I always, you know, I make it very clear in all of my articles and all of my sort of blogs and the way that I describe my philosophies around therapy that this is kind of where I'm coming from. And it's interesting, I think people are led to me, whether they know it, in their, you know, consciously or not, that they know that there's something they may need to work on. Because I'm telling you, most of my clients want to go back and want to take a look at it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually.
Well, you know, part of it is your lead. And, you know, in a therapeutic situation, clients kind of learn, in a sense, I think. They learn what you're looking for, and they learn to think like the therapist they're with.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of identify strongly. And you're right, in a sense. My point of view has been therapy for me has always been what I consider education.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always educating my clients, and I tell them right off the bat, you know, I know stuff you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give you all my tricks. And by the time you leave here, you're going to think just like me.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you'll see things in a very, very different perspective, because you're not going to think like you, and you're not going to think like how you did in the past. And you're going to look at people and look at situations from a very, very different perspective. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while, but they eventually come back and they go, wow, you know, I never noticed, you know, I was at a family function, you know, and all of a sudden I started looking at how, you know, Uncle Bill was talking to Aunt Jane or my mother was talking to my father. I never really saw how they got along or how they communicated or how dysfunctional that was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only because, you know, I taught them to look at it the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if a therapy is good and it works for somebody, they kind of think like the therapist. There has to be that piece mm-hmm. where they kind of absorb your skills.
Mm-hmm.
So
I completely agree, and I've had similar experiences where a client over a period of time will go home for the holidays or whatever and come back, and their lens has just been shifted or mm-hmm. adjusted, or there's a different color of glass over their, you know, over the lens, however you want to phrase it, and they notice their family and the interactions, and a lot of, it's just a totally different experience than they had before, and sometimes that actually can be really difficult. Now, the problem, you know, some people have with the awareness, let's say they get to an awareness of maybe that the fact they were injured in some way, you know, emotionally,
mm-hmm.
that can be hard on its own because, you know, maybe ignorance is bliss for some people in some ways, you know, as far as having to go back into your family and maybe having realized that actually mom, you know, checked out on you and it was painful and you've maybe done some grief work and then you need to sort of sit with that, and some people have anger that comes up and they process, you know, around, you know, this type of stuff coming up to their awareness that maybe they've really pushed down for good reason, you know, because it's not comfortable, yet they're having some, it's being reflected in some way in their life, and that's what usually brings them in to me. And
Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes you actually, I have to teach them to confront those people in their past.
Yep.
Which is not always productive. I mean, it's productive in a sense that they can speak what they have to. They confront the issue that they have to, but it's not always met with a lot of success. And so they get upset because it didn't change anything. And I say to them, you know, it's okay that it didn't change anything. It's more important that you said what you had to say and that you cleared the air and got rid of whatever that ugly piece was. But the fact that it didn't change or the person didn't agree or admit doesn't make it a failure situation.
But right, right. Which is
tough.
Why I think it's important that they go into that really monitoring their expectations of the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right, you never know. I mean, they may not hear what they want to hear, and, you know, they need to be prepared for that. Check in with themselves, you know, what are they expecting? Hopefully nothing. That would be the best, because then they can go get it off their chest
mm-hmm.
and not be severely disappointed. Or, you know, I think people naturally being human would want to hear from a people that maybe have inadvertently or not so inadvertently done them harm. And unfortunately, not everyone's able to give that. But if clients have, you know, family stuff and they want to go confront or discuss or want to talk about it, I think that's great for them to be able to do that. But I do caution them against the, you know, watching what their expectations of the outcome are and trying not to attach too much to it, because sometimes mm-hmm. that can be, in a way, a little bit traumatizing again, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people have to realize that, you know, they're hitting a very, very concrete system. You know, if it's a family, long-term family conflict or a real bad pattern, and, you know, they're kind of out of the family, you know, they've graduated, they're out, and now they're coming back in to confront this system that's still intact. They can't really believe that they're going to change that system, because that system still has a function for the people who are still in it.
Yep.
So, you know, they have to realize that that system is, you know, fixed in stone, but you know, they have to kind of grow themselves.
Absolutely. And because it is a fixed system, more than likely, if they try to interject some kind of hope for change or what they've learned in therapy and, you know, this and that, they're going to meet with resistance. And I talk to my clients about that too. Look, you know, this is a system. They've been operating like this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've done some great work. Good for you. But don't expect to bulldoze into that system and knock down all the bricks.
Exactly.
They're probably up pretty strongly.
Lisa, we're kind of out of time.
Okay.
So I want to know if there's anything you want to promote to the audience out there, whoever they may be, since we never know who they are. But this is your opportunity to talk about maybe your website or your ebook or anything you want
sure.
to go out there with.
Yeah, I'd love to. I work with individuals, but I also do a lot of couples work as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I have done a lot of writing in the last several years that I really enjoy as sort of a side interest for me. I've written a lot of articles, and I write a lot of tools and tips for people around mental health and relationship issues that all can be found on my website, mm-hmm. which is www.lisakifttherapy.com, and that's L-I-S-A-K-I-F as in Frank, T, therapy. In addition, I've actually just completed a workbook. It's a premarital counseling workbook. Mm-hmm. I've got this this plan to put out a number of workbooks under a brand name, Therapy at Home, and my premarital counseling is the first one in a planned series of a number of workbooks with different topics related to individual therapy and relationship counseling.
Lisa, I want to thank you for the information on your family of origin counseling and therapy process, and I hope that the audience gets information that will be helpful to them. And if they need to find you, I know that you're in San Diego, and they can contact you through your website. So I want to thank you again for being a guest on The Shrink Is In.
Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Until next time, this is Dr. Howard Gar for The Shrink Is In.
You have been listening to The Shrink Is In, and your host has been Dr. Howard Gar. If you want to learn more about Dr. Gar, go to his website at www.drsgurr.com.